no more secret lists shared amongst our staff and interns here at the Capitol about which legislators to avoid taking the elevator with. No more wink-wink jokes about which officials are the worst serial harassers. Daylight is coming for everyone.
Hey everybody, this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, bringing to you an Out to Coop Extra Holiday Edition. Actually, for those of you who've listened to this week's release of Out to Coop podcast, you already know what I'm about to say, is that we are releasing this Out to Coop Extra as a collaborative podcast, our first ever collaborative podcast with the folks over at Inside 254 Podcast. That's Amanda Lynch Morris and Colleen Clemens. They have, their podcast is fantastic. You may have heard our interview as an Out to Coop Extra with Colleen Clemens a few weeks back when she was basically being harassed and attacked by right-wing trolls over a very simple tweet that she put out about toxic masculinity. So we brought Colleen on at that point to talk a little bit about toxic masculinity and broaden out the conversation around, a lot of these allegations and a lot of these revelations, as it were, in the wake of the Harvey Weinstein scandal. We're looking at legislators across the country being held accountable for their sexual harassment, and those who have not been held accountable, like Donald Trump, like, oh, I don't know, a whole boatload and truckload of Republican legislators and lawmakers. But this has come home recently, as listeners of Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast know. It's come home recently to Pennsylvania as the first story broke. The first big story that broke was State Senator Dalen Leach was brought up on allegations. There was a story that appeared in the Philadelphia Inquirer about this. One of the friends of the show, Colleen Kennedy, was kind of caught up in this, and then Dalen Leach went on to attack her and saying some pretty nasty stuff about her on social media. And then the ball kept on rolling as we're finding out that there's, you know, even more to come down the road. So basically, today's Out to Coop Extra, we wanted to bring the conversations that we've been having on an Out to Coop podcast about what's happening in the Pennsylvania State Capitol when it comes to sexual misconduct in conversation with the folks over at Inside 254 who have been focusing on issues of feminism, kind of women's rights, and the broader issues, the structural issues, if you will, the power issues around gender, sexuality, around sexual harassment, around the kind of toxic environment that, you know, women are forced to exist in. And we get, not only do we get to kind of the analysis part, but we also talk a little bit about at the end of today's show about the opportunity that's staring us in the face if we're willing to do the work, if we're willing to actually really kind of buckle down and organize for power. So we're going to take a quick short break, and then we're going to get right into the podcast. This was recorded earlier today. This is Friday, the 22nd of December. And we hope you enjoy this. And if things do get nasty over these holidays, we hope having an extra podcast right before the holidays will give you something else to listen to. So once again, folks, hope you have a safe and happy holiday. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back with Amanda Morris, Colleen Clemens, and, of course, Sean Kitchen in this special edition of Out to Coop Podcast. Extra. Extra. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Over the past 6 years, we've brought unapologetic, progressive, activist media to Pennsylvania and beyond. We've helped hold those in power accountable and shine a light on some amazing activist work. We've broken national stories and established a reputation as an aggressive, independent media site. As newsrooms close and traditional journalists lose their jobs, hard-hitting, investigative news suffers. If we care about our democracy, we have to find new, sustainable models of journalism. And frankly, no one's going to do it for us. After the Trump election, we dug in even deeper, Thanks to some longtime members, one-time donations, and a shift in other resources, we brought on more writers and started paying them. Now we're doubling down and want to expand our infrastructure and pay our writers even more. We need to invest in our media if we have a chance to resist the unprecedented assault on democracy, working families, women's rights, and our planet. History will remember the choices we make today. So take a minute to become a member of Raging Chicken Press. For as little as $5 a month, the price of a local craft beer or a cup of coffee, you will be supporting homegrown progressive journalists and media activists. Go to RagingChickenPress.org and click on the Support and Membership tab to become a member. Leave a one-time donation or learn about other ways that you can help. We don't have billionaire backers. Keeping progressive activist media going strong depends on you. Thank you for all your help and support. Keep up the fight. Hey, everybody. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, and welcome to our first ever, and I hope not the last, collaborative podcast with the folks over at Inside 254. It's Amanda Morris and Colleen Clemens. So to start off today, why don't we just kind of go around and kind of introduce ourselves, and then we'll talk a little about what we're kind of going to get into today. So Amanda, why don't you start us off?
Sure. Hi, Kevin. Hi, Sean. We're really happy to be collaborating with you today. I know we're going to be talking about some really important issues. And I like that our podcasts approach these issues from slightly different angles. So I think it'll give all of our listeners on both sides, both podcasts, a really good broader perspective. So thank you for the idea. I'm glad we're doing this. I am an associate professor at Kutztown University in the English department with you and Colleen. I'm also the faculty union president for our chapter of APSCUF until May 2018, not that I'm counting. So I have that sort of labor perspective as well. So I think that's all you need to know about me. I'll throw it over to my podcast partner and bud.
Hi, this is Colleen. Thanks so much for having us, because I think it's really exciting that you're inviting us on, since we talk about feminism so often on our podcast. So it's really nice that you're bringing in this gender studies perspective. So I'm associate professor of English at Kutztown University. And there, I'm director of Women's and Gender Studies. And so our feminist activist podcast is very excited to be talking to you today.
Mm-hmm. Hello, everyone. This is Sean Kitchen. I am the assistant editor with the Raging Chicken Press. I'm also living out here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I spend my free time during the week when they're in session. So it's sort of like being in hell, and I enjoy it. I spent the past few weeks listening to all the rumors that are swirling around the Capitol, especially around this issue of the sexual harassment scandal. I thought it was a really good idea to get all four of us together and talk about this. The first two big stories broke this week with Daylon Leach and House Representative Thomas Caltagirone out in the Kutztown or Berks County area in Reading. And we're about like two legislators deep into a rabbit hole. It contains about like six or seven more legislators that are going to be involved in this. So I guess it's a good way to get this out of the, good idea to get a good chance to get this out of the way now, or to really have really great conversation on this.
Yeah, great. So, and I think that today that we're going to kind of have a roundtable on this. And I'll tell you, I have got two agendas for this today and for why we bring it together. Well, first, kudos to Sean. Sean was the one who actually came up with the idea and thought this would be a good idea to bring our podcast together for this. So kudos to Sean for that. And thank you to Amanda and Colleen for saying, hey, yeah, this is a good idea. And it's a crazy, hectic time of year to be able to kind of come on and do this. But I know Colleen was like rushing to get to the computer. Time, right?
Jogging through the grocery store. It's good. The four of us finding a similar time is astounding. So yeah. I'm really excited.
I agree. And so for my agenda for this is like, one is like, you know, like I've said, is that we've been coming at this issue from looking at what's happening in terms of the Capitol doing some kind of national coverage and things like this. And people know that Colleen was on for an Out to Coop Extra. We were talking about toxic masculinity when she was kind of being attacked from these kind of right-wing trolls and so on. And so that's where we kind of like broached this kind of interchange, this connection between Inside 254. And so, you know, that was number one, to kind of follow up on that conversation. And then secondly, the other agenda here is, look, I think, and people have heard me on our podcast say this quite often, is that we need to kind of start networking and building our connections among folks that are doing this work and looking for these opportunities to bring these conversations together. Because exactly as Amanda had said and Colleen has said, these are not kind of like opposing conversations, right? But we're kind of hitting different audiences. And so the more that we kind of have an opportunity to bring these discussions together to kind of like double our efforts, so to speak, the better. So,
agreed. It's all about intersectionality. Yay.
Bing, ding, 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 ding. Right. So maybe a way to kind of begin for today, especially because, you know, Sean and I just got done talking with all the stuff with specific what's happening here in Pennsylvania on our own podcast. But maybe kind of go kind of bring it over to you all. Say kind of over the past several weeks. I mean, obviously, this is a much bigger conversation just the past several weeks. But a lot of this has broken, especially since the Harvey Weinstein stuff has taken place. And then now we're seeing this happening right here in our state capital. So maybe just kind of give it over to Amanda and Colleen to get us going on a roundtable.
Sure. Do you want to start, my friend, or I have some points to make?
You go ahead.
Okay. So I'm just going to throw these points out here. We can address them right away, or we can talk about them later as they come up. But number one, the idea of the tax money, taxpayer money being used to pay off victims of sexual assault and sexual harassment, both at the state house level and at the congressional level, which we've seen, is abhorrent to me. It is terrible that these bodies that people were elected are using taxpayer money to pay off these victims. That needs to stop. The other point I want to make is that so just because men are Democrats and support a feminist agenda does not mean that they cannot also commit sexual harassment and commit sexual assault. Now, I hate that we have to keep saying hashtag not all men, but we know that it's not all men. But the problem is it's too many men. And so this leads to my next point. I have actually gotten, just in the last few weeks, with all of these stories coming out, I have like hit my limit. My patience is at an end. I no longer, as a feminist woman, as a feminist identifying woman, I no longer want an equal seat at the table. I want women to be the majority voices in public life. I want women to take the lead for a while, because men have been leading and leading in society and running everything forever, and they're really fucking it up. And no offense to the men in my life who I admire, and you too are some, and of course my own husband and my colleagues. But the bottom line is, I don't care if it's not all men. We're done. We're done. I think men have taken it. They've screwed it up. It's time for men to take a step back and let women take the lead for a while. So.
Well, I say this. I mean, given the track record of men for the past several millennia, I think there's a strong argument. Say, hey, let's give women a shot for a while, huh?
And honestly, we've got lots of different societies to look at as for practical, procedural ways to make this happen. Indigenous societies in this land, look at the Haudenosaunee, look at some of the Southwestern tribes, look at other indigenous nations just in this land and around the world. Some of them are matriarchal. Some of them are matrilineal, and that means that the matriarchal societies, women are the ones making all the decisions, including whether to go to war and what happens in the society. I think we've got good examples out there. I think it's time for us to really seriously consider shifting to a more matriarchal society so that women are taking more point, more lead, and also getting more of the credit for doing all the work. So that's where I am.
No, I think it's a great point. One thing that you said that, you know, I come back to is, you know, I had conversations that kind of revolved around this in some of my classes, right? Afterwards, some students would be talking about these issues and so on. And I kept on coming back to say, I don't understand what men are so freaked out about to begin with, right? I said, why is this even hard, like hard to hear, right? And this is one of these things that just troubles me to no end, is that, you know, I know, and Amanda, I know you well enough now, you know, so there's going to be people that are going to hear what you said, right, and be like, oh, now she's blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't understand why we can't have a conversation that starts from that direction. I mean, if you're telling me that there's not ample reason, right, to be absolutely enraged all the time, given the track record, what a lot of people are only seeing for the first time right now, right? A lot of men are only seeing for the first time right now. Why is it hard to hear somebody that's pissed off about stuff like this? I mean, as a person who's pissed off a lot in my life, right, I'd recognize that stuff comes from things that I care about. And so how is it hard to have a conversation to begin from this place? Frankly, I think you're right. I think you're right that we need this. And that is only one of the beginnings of this reckoning that we have to have before we can ever get to a point where we can talk about
it. Can I say something about that?
Yeah,
please.
Can I say? So I think what happens in these conversations is we don't talk about money and power, and we instead talk about sex and gender. And so to answer your question, Kevin, I think what's wrapped up in that anxiety that you're talking about is the anxiety of losing power and financial status. And one of my goals of this conversation is to really separate money and power and sex and gender, because this is not a sex problem. And I don't even necessarily think this is a gender problem. The problem is that power is gender. Right. So there's a difference. This isn't a men problem. This is that power has been gendered and in the seat of a patriarchal structure for so long. It's almost like we don't know how to envision how to unpack it.
And quite frankly, men, I know we're saying it's not necessarily gendered, but the bottom line is I think a lot of men cannot imagine a society where they are not at the center of power.
When I'm talking about this issue with my students, I talk about how it doesn't feel good to give up privilege. People probably don't want to give that up. And in order for there to be some kind of equity, there are certain groups of people, particularly white men, again, structurally, that are going to have to give up some privilege for equity to happen. And I understand individually how that causes anxiety. I don't think this is like a women with pitchforks movement or a witch hunt. I think it's finally maybe the tipping point of what feminists have been saying for decades, if not centuries.
And I like to add that in Pennsylvania, I believe our political situation is probably like the best suited for this. I think like 18% of our legislature, not even like, or maybe like 12% or something like that, is represented by female legislators, by women. And we have one of the most astoundingly lowest representations of women in a state legislature in the country. And, you know, over the summertime, while I was on vacation in California, I was keeping up with happening in Pennsylvania politics. And, you know, state representative, female representative, through her campaign account, shot off a thing about, like, how women are underrepresented in Pennsylvania. And I shot it back, like, I retweeted it and pretty much said, yeah, I've never seen a woman be involved in a major decision in Pennsylvania in the 3 years that I've been out here. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I shot that tweet off, I had like a male staffer from like the Senate, a high power male staffer, pretty much tell me, no, that's just nothing but a lie. You don't know what you're talking about. And then after he retweeted it, I had a couple more male senators actually like try to tell me I was lying here about this. You know, when women have no place in power in Pennsylvania politics. And then when the Me Too movement started happening and Angela Columbus wrote that op-ed, or not an op-ed, but more like she wrote as a contributor, not as a reporter. She wrote an article basically stating that she's never seen a woman in the 10 plus years she's been in Harrisburg sit down at the table when it came to budget policy decisions in Pennsylvania that, you know, women don't have a seat at the table in Pennsylvania pretty much for anything. One of the things that I watched SB3, the vote for the abortion bill back in February this year, and pretty much the only female senator on that judiciary committee was Senator Lisa Pascola from the Berks County area. She was the only woman sitting on that judiciary committee vote from either party, waiting to vote to decide on letting the 20-week abortion ban come through to. The Senate floor. And one of the things, you know, you've seen the past couple of weeks, especially here in Pennsylvania, there was the press conference a couple weeks ago. It was pretty much like the opening act of this scandal, the opening salvo of it pretty much, where 12 female legislators from both parties stood up on the stage and said, no more. You know, no more sexual harassment, no more having this stuff enshrouded in secrecy, no more payouts. We're going to be introducing these bills. And like the male legislators who were in the room were standing in support with them in the back of the room, you know, where like the news cameras are at. You know, just some observations from the Capitol, you know, within over the past few months and frankly, the past couple of years.
Well, and that's the point, right? That's not equitable. There's no equity. The visual of that is that it's one of inequity. And so when decisions are being made, and again, it doesn't mean like if a woman's at the table, she's going to necessarily do something feminist. We all watched Michelle Bachmann, right? We know that's not necessarily the case. However, equity and perspective might, or perspective and might actually help some equity happen. But the visuals that women are seeing this year of a bunch of white dudes sitting around a table making decisions about healthcare and our bodies. I mean, at what point does everybody just stop and say, this is not okay? I know Amanda talks about this a lot, right? What are the optics of this? Is no one stopping and saying, what is the optic here?
Yeah, I think I think that's like, and right and true that there's people, especially, look, I mean, Republican Party, they've gone off the rails in so many ways, right? So I'm just going to leave them out of it, like, for a second. Because in so many ways, where the obligation comes from a Democratic Party, like, within this state, right, that makes claims to have progressive values, makes claims to kind of, like, right, be in support of women, right? They have an obligation, in my mind, right, to be out in front on this stuff and to be addressing it in a proactive way. So, Well, and this is why, you know, I know that you all had, you were, you know, kind of, again, not just waiting around, right, going out and kind of holding training sessions for women who want to run for office. Because I think that's what's really what it's going to take. Because this, not only does the Democratic Party, I mean, I look at what's happening right now in terms of how they're responding to Daylen Leach and how they're responding to stuff in the Capitol, and I think it's shameful. I think it's
But disgusting. It's not surprising.
But it's silent. It is absolute silence.
I mean, it's not surprising. Like the Republican Party does this really well, even if they don't care about women's rights and stuff like that. You can put that out there. They consistently put the young female, younger legislators, male and female, out in front of every single major policy issue when they have a press conference in Harrisburg, right? Martina White or Tara Tuhill or some of the younger female Republicans, whenever there's a major policy initiative, they are standing, they get to speak at the microphone first, and they're usually, you know, conducting these press conferences or events. When it comes from the Democratic Party, it's just a bunch of old white dudes who have a foot and a half inside their coffin who are leading the policy discussion, who are going off message, who are going on 15, 20 minute tangents when the press conference is maybe a half an hour long, and they're overshooting their times. So it really, for me, it's not surprising that especially the House Democrats, Frank Dermody, are acting in this way, because this is how they always act. They always act by just trotting out a bunch of old white dudes who are almost dead at this point to lead these major policy initiatives and not really talk about what's the actual problems at hand.
Yeah, and I look at it like this, and it's like, look, they have also when candidates want to run that could potentially challenge them. When women candidates want to run, when progressives, people from the left want to run, they basically will pat them on the back and say, well, good luck to you. No support, no training, no right. money, nothing.
Right.
Right. Which is why, you know, again, like, I'll, you know, right back at you guys is like basically saying, well, this is why we got to do it ourselves, because no one else is going to do it. And that not only are we going to train the representation, right, we're talking about this, but to be able to kind of shift the discussion about like how we even deal with, and I don't want to say just women's issues here, but I'm talking about policy issues, about how we think about, you know, about care, how we think about our communities. I mean, all that is tied up in this discussion.
The idea of the greater good, right? The common good. So the fact that women have not been taken into consideration for these arguments on the left about we want to fight for the common good, we want to be for the greater good, we want all in one, well, except those women who want to share power with us, oh, we can't have that. So the Old Boys Network in this state, my understanding it, from what I've seen and people who I've talked to who are involved in Democratic politics in the state of Pennsylvania, and I've heard this back since when I was in my 20s in Pittsburgh, it is an old boys network, absolutely. And it is no, they don't support, they don't reach out. The party should be doing outreach into communities and into segments of the population where there are women who might actually want to run, but who have no idea how to begin. I mean, Colleen and I should not be the ones, okay? I don't mind that we do this. This is good because we care, but we are not the ones that should be holding political boot camps for women who are interested in running for office. The Democratic fucking party of this state should be running those in every county if they can to encourage more women to do outreach. Why aren't they doing that?
Yeah, well, it goes right back to power. I mean, exactly what you said. And that's what, and, you know, again, it's like, I feel like we're in this transitional stage, right, that where we should not have to be the ones that are doing this when there's a party apparatus, when there's this kind of stuff. And yet we're the ones who have to do this. Right. And I say that, you know, again, we're being pointed at the Democratic Party right now, in part because they're in the limelight. But I'll also kind of add to this. This goes for all progressive organizations, right, that are contributing to this. And I'll give you this perfect example. You may have seen this. Josh Idelson kind of wrote this piece probably about a month ago now, was basically calling out the ways that kind of in labor unions across the country, right, that there's the similar kind of problem that kind of they're seeing there. Right. And in there, it was only a paragraph, but basically said in Pennsylvania, right, there are women who were basically pushed to the margins, right, by some of the labor leadership in this country, in this state, right, pushed to the margins, forced to the sidelines, and were just kind of made to feel completely unwelcome, right? And I know personally from people who, this is hearsay at this point, right, that basically came out and were basically calling women unconscionable names, right, even through email exchanges and things like this to try to push them out of it because they felt threatened for their party. And this was in PA-AFL-CIO leadership, right? And so I think that not only do we need to kind of be talking about just the Democratic Party, but this needs to be in every single like progressive, so-called progressive movement, that these conversations are kind of front and center. And we start thinking about power sharing, about kind of how we actually kind of are promoting candidates and how we're going to doing mutual aid. And one of the things that we've talked about Raging Chicken quite often, and this is a little bit kind of is connected but not, is we talk about independent media, the stuff that you guys are doing, the stuff that we're doing. Like, you know, frankly, again, we shouldn't have to be doing this stuff, right? We do it because we care, because we think it's important. But the only kind of alternative to it is like, well, then we have to find supporters to kind of can support it. Because guess what? The big donors aren't going to give us money. Right. Whether, you know, we're talking about labor unions, whether we're talking about Democratic Party, we're talking about the progressives, we're talking about faculty members for that matter, even though we're all faculty members, they're not going to be like throwing chunks of change and seeing this kind of investment is. And that's horrible to have to say. But it is kind of, you know, to borrow the slogan, it's on us, right, to have to actually change this.
Oh, yeah. You don't see NPR banging down our door or MSNBC banging down your door. I mean, we could even go to there if you want to go there. You know, the big media, everybody talks about the big media. Well, OK, big media on the left. Those of us who are doing this sort of grassroots work, trying to bring some of those quieter stories to a bigger audience. We don't see them banging down our doors like, hey, we want to syndicate you. Hey, we want to include you in the conversation. So, again, Colleen and I talk about this a lot on our podcast, structural. There are a lot of structural issues in this country that not only keep out more progressive voices, but also keep out women and women's perspectives.
And I think that we need to really start complicating and analyzing all these things that are considered like sacred cows. I read a great piece yesterday by Andy Zeisler, and she was like, we don't even need to put D or R next to their name. What is the benefit of this? Like, this is not a party issue. This is bigger than party.
Yep.
And so I don't give a shit if you're a Democrat, a Republican, and I don't give a shit. Just put your name in the paper. Because why are we classifying what your party is in a situation that it does not matter? Because it is a structure that is focused on money, power, and silence. And in this case, we are learning very quickly, everything that we hold sacred, right? NPR, the New York Times, you know, all these things, Charlie Rose, PBS, mm-hmm. No structure as quote unquote progressive as or liberal as it's supposed to be. They are not immune to harassment and assault against women and men, right? Like, these are all things that are focused on money and power and not equity. And until any of these parties are going to talk about equity at this point, it almost feels like not one of them is going to be sustainable through this cultural moment, I hope.
That's a great point. That's a great point. And I think about, one of the consequences of the silence, and I'm glad you kind of paired those up about money, power, and silence. Mm-hmm. Because, one of the things that Sean and I talked about on our podcast earlier today is that, Angela Columbus from the Philly Inquirer, right, who's been breaking some of these stories, one of the things that she pointed to, and now some more women legislators are coming forward and talking about this, there were actual lists that were circulated among women legislators and staffers, basically saying, look, you do not want to be in an elevator with this person. You do not want to be alone in a room with this person.
I wouldn't say like physical lists, but like whisper lists.
No,
like you don't want to be around this person.
That's what
there's
I'm talking
there's
about.
No, like,
we all have them.
We all have them.
We all have them.
We all know. All women.
Place I have ever been in any school situation I've ever been in, I know that list.
And so do I know who not to talk to. I know who not to be in a room with. I know who to avoid. I know where not to park. I know those things. We know those things.
I know. Like, I was going to say, when I brought this, talked to some of the female legislator lobbyists and stuff like that, not legislators, but they were all, we've known not to be around this guy for years now.
Right. It's common knowledge among us. And that's why I'm watching my face and Amanda's face on this. We don't even look mad. We just look exhausted.
Yes.
I'm just watching our faces and I'm like, you can't even get a rise out of us because we're like, yep. Yeah. Been saying this for years. Yep. Been saying this for years. And thank you everybody, right, for coming along in 2017. We're super grateful. But did it take this long to actually believe, in the Me Too movement, when Time named those people, that video moved me because one of the women said, we can't all be sluts and liars.
That's right.
We can't all be sluts and liars. So even if there is that outlier, Jesus, like, we can't all be lying.
Yeah. And I actually just saw, I want to say it was the CBC. There was Ian Campo. I just saw this video that he did and I posted it yesterday. He's basically talking about how, they were driving, he and his wife were driving, and their only spot left in this parking garage was next to a van. And she was like, no, you can't park there. And he's like, what are you talking about? I can't park there. She's like, no, somebody will take me. And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? She's like, no, this is what we learn. So whether it's parking in a parking garage, whether it's that's when the men in our lives are going, this is the messaging. This is what you've been thinking about. I don't ever have to think about that. I mean, if this is the moment where men in particular need to wake up and go, I didn't realize how different your experience walking through life is. And then that goes into politics. It goes into education. It goes into just living our daily lives and in our professions. I mean, I hope this is sustainable. I hope this doesn't just die like a phase. I mean, we really need structural change and we need men on board to make it happen.
Well, and instead of seeing, if we come back to Pennsylvania, instead we see that the former state rep, Jewel Williams, right, they paid out $30,000 for them and is now Philadelphia's sheriff, right? If every sentence didn't end that way, maybe we wouldn't be so frustrated. And is now Philadelphia's sheriff, right? And now holds another position of power and money. So, it's like, if it stopped with the period after his name, I wouldn't be so angry all the time. But it's like, we paid them out, we bought off somebody's silence, and who's this guy saying, I wish it would have gone to, I wanted it to go to trial, but they just told me to pay her off. Like,
Calderon, like,
is that great? Yeah, tell us about that. Because I was like, oh yeah, I'm sure you really wanted that to go to trial, dude.
Like, Calderon is from Berks County, is from Redding, Berks County. You know, he had an accuser come forward. She went on the record, a pretty lengthy story about how he harassed her. And I believe the issues are different. The two issues that are talked about in the Post-Gazette Inquirer story.
That's what I'm looking at, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was paid, his victim was paid $250,000 in 2015. Yeah. Now, this is before the elections. This is before the 2015 elections. And the way I look at it like this is, he's also the co-chair of the House Judiciary Committee. And I said, well, okay. So he was put back on that committee chair in light of this, after he was reelected in 2016, 2017, the current session that we're in. And pretty much, or the 2017, 2016, the current session. And my argument is he could have, as a form of punishment, they could have taken him off that chair. And someone's like, well, no, you can't do that.
And just didn't happen.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And also the thing is, if the party was serious about getting him out, they could have found someone to primary against him and to get him out of office. And instead, he gets to keep his chair, and now he has no signs of resigning, and he wants to run for re-election in 2017 for the 18 and 19 session. So he has no plans of stopping. And it looks like the same thing's going to be happening here with Dalen Leach, too, the state senator.
Well,
but why wouldn't they run? What is there stopping them from running?
Well, this is something, you know, one of the things that, again, Sean and I were talking a little bit about before was that, look, when Sean first told me about that guy, right, I was like, okay, look, you say, well, you know, they couldn't take him down. I said, wait, where's the law? Where's the law that the Democratic Party could not do this? And frankly, there is no law. There is no rule that says because he's a senior member or whatever that he has to be that. It's just because that's the way things have been done. And that's the point.
He's been up here for 40 years. He deserves a seat. And that's how we're going to reward him.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is what just drives me absolutely insane, is because it's what we're talking about. We're talking about women who have been like abused and then given hush money. Right. Mm-hmm. And a guy who just basically said, well, because we don't want to make everyone uncomfortable, we're going to let him continue in his position of power. I mean, that's really what's at stake for me. And, and again, I hear, you know, what Colleen, you're just kind of talking about before, too, is when I think about like this, is that because I don't live through, right, the secret lists, right, the whisper lists about who not to be in, because that is not forced on me, right, just because I'm a white guy, right, requires me in my mind to listen to people who this does happen to, right? I mean, I think that's kind of like the issue of, in my mind is like, why wouldn't you start from the perspective of like, hey, guess what? There's a different experience because, you know, these women are not me and I'm not a woman. So maybe I should listen to what that experience sounds like, as opposed to starting from the well, we should question her, yeah. Right? We should wonder, well, maybe, you know, no. I mean, why don't you start from – this is why, you know, I got into an argument back and forth with somebody last week about saying, look, I'm just going to start from I'm going to believe these women that are coming forward. Right?
Thank you.
And guess what?
That's it. All be sluts and liars.
Exactly.
Believe women. Fuck. Why is that so hard?
And believe doesn't mean not interrogate, right?
No.
I don't mean like interrogation, but like believe doesn't mean then immediately it's over.
Right.
But at least let's start at the place of believing. Let's just start there. That is the big, like with empowerment counseling, working with domestic violence and sexual assault survivors, that's the foundation. You believe what the person is telling you and you go from there. It is not my job to arbitrate and find out what's true and what isn't. That's the law's job.
Exactly.
But when I'm dealing with the person, the foundation is I believe you. And that is not the foundation in most of these conversations, is if you watch how these people are getting dragged through the media, does anybody wonder why no one comes forward? The cycle of it is amazing to me. Why didn't these women speak up sooner? Are you watching what you're saying?
I would say for that, the statement by Senator Dalen Leach.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
God.
Like the statement.
Oh my God.
Basically, we talk about this in the podcast.
I just want to give her a hug.
Well, like, I'll tell you, it's so like Colleen is a friend of ours too, as well.
I was in the camp
as I was reading the story on Leech. Like, okay, he's probably going to find a way to survive this. He probably won't be able to have to resign. And then I like went to his Facebook page after I got done reading the story at like 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning. And I read his original statement. Like, this is before he went into like victim blaming and making jokes about it. He went off first thing. This was a whisper campaign started by an ally of my political opponent. Then he went into attacking. I'm sorry. I'm just watching Amanda just dig her face into her hands. And then went right after the female journalist who wrote the story, basically saying, well, she's part of the PLCA, and she, like, her and her organization, the Legislative Correspondents Association out here in Harrisburg, the newsroom, they invite me to tell jokes every year at their gridiron dinner, you know, and this is the story she wrote. She doesn't like my jokes. And then he names the one person who went on the record by name and started criticizing her because this former staffer who happens to be the top fundraiser for the Democratic Party in the state names her by name and just said, oh, she didn't like my jokes. Well, how come she worked for me a second time, you know, afterwards, you know, after she had these concerns the first time around? Obviously, it wasn't that bad because she came back and worked for me the next time around. And then after I read that, I was like, okay, I just stopped reading and like, he has to resign after this. There's no way. Like, you've attacked pretty much all the women involved in this story without saying, I'm sorry, without a single thing. And then came the joke about, you know, a woman posting a photo. Oh, here's, I stand with Dalen with his arm respectfully on my shoulder. And he's like, I'm sorry, I traumatized you. Like, are you fucking kidding me? You just got accused of sexual harassment and you're joking about it the next day.
Well, and this is the kind of stuff that disturbs me, and it goes right back to what you all are talking about, Colleen and Amanda, about the kind of structural issues here, and the lack of the ability to think about systems and how we respond to things. Because, you know, I look at this, if you follow systems, then you know that everything that Dalen Leech is saying is just like out of a playbook. Right. We can recognize it on the left when it's like the Koch brothers funding like an alternative legislative practice through the American Legislative Exchange Council. We could say, look, there's this whole structure. Then this is how it happens. But this is the same thing. Right. Except it's got a longer history. Right. And it's consistent. And it's a same kind of playbook. So if, you know, this is the argument I was having about, you know, why would I start from believe women? I said, well, because the track record of the men, believing the men, not so good. Right? On the other side of it.
We automatically believe men, right? That's the structure of our society, right? Is that we automatically believe men. We automatically say, well, if a man said it or said it didn't happen, then he must be telling the truth. Instead of flipping that script and saying, actually, maybe we need to start by believing the women and questioning the men.
And also, like, the question of due process. Well, he deserves due process. Well, you know, calling one of your accusers who called you out in a public Facebook statement said, no, the reason why we didn't come forward is because we were scared of your reaction. And then he goes on to call her a horrific monster and a wrecking ball of human hatred. Maybe that's why. Where's the due process in that? Is that not an admission of like your own hubris at that point?
But let's just say, this goes back to the point about like due process is about the law. Right. Yeah, so let that stuff work itself out if there's going to be those cases through. Right. But come on. I don't know.
But then, well, and then we complicate all this with the NDAs, right? These non-disclosure agreements that I feel like we have to talk about, because I see them as women who are stuck between a rock and a hard place. And if you talk and if you read what women who have taken these NDAs say, they're like, I didn't want to take it. And then I feel guilty now because I'm seeing all this happening and I can't speak up and I'm still afraid.
Right.
So the structure of the NDA is like, well, sure, you got some money, but then you don't get your due process either. And I mean, maybe some women are dancing away like, yay, I got my money. But if you talk to women, they usually regret them and they feel that they are powerless because of them and voiceless.
Right. And they're sitting like, look, I mean, this is exactly the point. So the idea is like, do you take a non-disclosure agreement and a payout, right, and have some hopes of being able to continue on your career and the career path that you've chosen.
Because let's remember, you are now being forced to leave your job, not the person who perpetrated the crime.
Exactly. And so then, and I think that's the balance, right? And that's the kind of what comes forward. And I think this is something, Amanda, you had said earlier too as well, is like, look, you know, if this is what it takes, I mean, I hope to God that this, again, this is not something that we're going to see a big bump and then it goes away again. I mean, this is something that we have to force and keep at the forefront of this conversation and our organizing efforts. I mean, also, I think that when we're looking at kind of defining, as candidates are looking for defining for the next election, the election cycle, Sean and I have been saying out to Coop that 2018 is going to be so critical in this state, right? We already know that there's been more kind of women putting their names forward of wanting to run than ever before. And I think that we need to be out in front, actively campaigning for these folks and actively advocating for their candidacy and doing whatever it is, whatever we can do to get these other bums out of office. And yes, they may have done some good things in the past, right? Great. Pat on the back. Now it's time to move on. Let's get the sea change in Pennsylvania. It's the only thing that I think is going to begin to sediment and put this stuff into practice for the longer term, because we cannot afford to let this go kind of back and drift back into the silence again.
And also we have to put this on.
And I think what you just said about, yes, maybe you did. Oh, go ahead, Sean.
I was going to say real quickly, we have to put this on the feet of the state party as well. The people, there was an incident back at the national convention back in July or August with a female delegate from Philadelphia. She was sexually harassed, groped by a delegate from the Philadelphia suburbs. And, you know, this became an issue within the Democratic Party. And she forced Marcel Groen to come up with a policy to address sexual harassment within the Democratic Party. And they shelved that policy since then. And if you look at the reaction of the Democratic Party, with these two, there's going to be a scandal breaking out here. This is just the beginning of it. It's not like it's just like these are going to be the only two. No, there's going to be more. I can tell you that. And there hasn't been a single word coming from Marcel Groen or the people running the Democratic Party. And so now you have organizations like Lancaster Stands Up, Keystone Progress, Reclaim Philadelphia, 215 People's Alliance, and other groups calling on the Democratic Party to have a concrete sexual harassment policy in place by January 5th.
Well, there you go.
By the time the winter committee meetings start.
Yeah, I'm looking at the time right now. I'm very conscious of the fact that Colleen has got to get her kid. So, Colleen, you were going to say something.
She's getting dropped off. So as long as we don't mind that I'm...
Oh, that's fine. Okay, I thought you had to go get her. My bad. All right, we'll go back to you. So before the kid duties kick in, I still got about another hour before my...
Oh, lucky you. And I'm just thinking... So many things that Sean just said, right? How the federal government didn't have any sexual harassment training until like 2 weeks ago, right? And then I have to sit there and do it every year. But how was that even possible? And I really like, so can you tell it, like, what seats are up? Like, what is up in 2018? What do I need to be paying more attention to? In PA, like, Sean, can you tell me, like, what do I need to focus my attention on?
Well, so before I get into that, I will just say that there's also going to be a round of legislation that a bunch of people are pushing forward, the Me Too legislation. After the Cattell Jerone story broke out about the $250,000 in payouts, House Minority Leader Frank Dermody released a statement saying that he proudly endorsed House Resolution 612, which forced one extra hour of ethics training from 2 to 3 hours of training on sexual harassment once a session.
How do these people get their fucking jobs? You know what? This is making me so angry. I'm like, oh God.
So
your anger.
He put that out there, but a bunch of the younger male legislators, especially like those like Mike Schlossberg, Brian Sims, Chris Rabb, you know, the women who co-signed the Me Too legislation, they're forcing to make this an issue, the very first legislative priority of 2018 when they come back. January 9th, when they come back in January, this is going to be the first legislative policy that these young legislators want to take up. I know there's backroom talks about trying to get Cattell Jerone thrown off of some of the caucuses that he belongs to. With younger Democrats, they wanted to they want to have nothing to do with him. The ones who are calling for his resignation are also trying to force him out of some of his delegations that he belongs to and try to ostracize him from the party. And really, there's been no forceful reaction coming from the leaders of the party. So the stuff that you are seeing coming forward is coming from people like Leanne Kruger-Branicki, yeah. Madeline Dean, who are she's running for lieutenant governor, and also your younger male and more progressive and your progressive male legislators. They're going to be pushing for this Me Too legislation. They want it to be the top priority of 2018 once they return to session.
Well, I know right now we have someone running that's planning on running in the 7th, right? There's a woman who's running in the 7th. I'm
freaking Molly Shaneen.
Yeah. I mean, so we have, for example, and again, we're just some.
I mean, there are women candidates running in these races. You have Christina Hartman and you have Jess King running against Smucker out here in the Lancaster and like whatever areas his county, his district goes to.
Jennifer O'Mara is trying to flip the 165th. We interviewed her on an Extra Extra. So
you have Katie Muth running in Royersford for the state Senate. There are a lot of state there are a lot of people declared. I believe House DC HDCC, the House Democratic Campaign Committee, has 155 people running as incumbents or challengers. Their high watermark was 175 back in 2006 when they flipped the state house. So they are pretty much like 20 people away from running their high watermark back in the mid 2000s to try and retake the state house. And there are a lot of women running in these districts. Pennsylvania Together is one of the groups on Facebook to follow, or Turn PA Blue is another one. You'll see a bunch of energized women and female candidates running in those groups. Western PA, you have Sarah Inamorato. She's challenging Dom Costa. She got the DSA endorsement. And you have Summer Lee. She is running against Paul Costa out in Braddock, too. And they just both secured the DSA endorsements. You have Elizabeth Fielder running in South Philly. She's running against Bill Keller. Again, another young progressive woman. So there are people starting to challenge. There are younger women out there starting to challenge, your old white dudes who are still in office pretty much.
One of the things you mentioned that I want to kind of underscore a bit, which is, if I have to look at my hopeful signs of actually concrete organizing kind of in the ground, the fact is that you're seeing, for example, DSA, Democratic Socialists of America, you're seeing the indivisible groups and things like this. Many of those organizations are led by, right, or at least a majority of the members are women. Right. And they represent a kind of a younger generation of activists that are coming up through the ranks that are doing concrete local organizing. And that for me is huge, because that actually puts us in a position where people are getting the kinds of training in everyday politics. Because, look, yeah. I came up, at a time, growing up in the 80s, right? Growing up was the Cold War that is still out there. You got all the kind of culture wars happening kind of like across the country, and kind of coming in and becoming an academic in that kind of climate where there was really ideologically rich discussions that were going on, all sorts of conflict and all this. But then also kind of getting to the point where realizing there's real limits to those kind of like purely ideological debates, right? That it's like you have to actually couple that with political organizing. And I think really in my lifetime, this is the first time that we're at a moment where we're seeing those things begin to come together. It's often messy. It's often difficult. I mean, just if you look at like the Women's March and Black Lives Matter and the discussions that happened around there, in my mind, those were some of the most productive discussions that took place, because neither of them went to their corners and went away, right? And that process is continuing right down at the local level. And that, I think, is our hope right there.
No, I agree with you. I think that the hard conversations about how to make this into a material, how to make these conversations translate into some kind of material or political difference, are finally being heard in academia. And I think that those intersections between, thinking and doing, are those intersections are getting stronger. And I think there are more and more people who are just not interested. I always say it's like masturbatory. Like, I don't, yeah. You can talk about theory all day. I do not care unless it actually has some physical material consequence for people. And I will add that ends in equity, right? Yep. That ends in an equitable society.
You know what?
I'm nodding. She's right. What she said.
I wish everybody could see this because you can see Amanda actually pointed to her picture.
What she said.
What she said.
I did that a lot with Amanda too. What she said.
So one of the things, just kind of as we kind of start to bring this to a close, is one of the things that I want to underscore, at least kind of leave for the conversation at this point, is that we hear a lot. People say we need to expand the conversation. We need to have a conversation about X, Y, and Z. And I have to say that that's always been a bit frustrating for me when it's strictly about the conversation. And I heard this, you know, I listen to the Majority Report podcast that I could listen to regularly. And the first time I heard someone actually put it in the way that is kind of like echoes the way I think about this. And Sam Cedar, who was the host of Majority Report, is saying, you know, same kind of issue here about a conversation. So, you know what? We don't need just a conversation. We need change in power. And the only time that those in power are going to actually have a real conversation, right, is when their own position of power is in threat. Right. That's it. And so when people want to say, we should have a conversation before. No. You know what? Half of the people that come out and say that we need to have a conversation, what they're trying to do is defer any ability for their power, right, to be taken away. And it's just a way of kind of delaying an actual change in order to have talk. Right. And it absolutely drives me insane, because this is kind of what we have to also bring back into our discourse, is we have to say what we're after here is not simply, you know, a change in a conversation. Of course, that's part of it. But we're also talking about a change of power. Right. So that we need to be talking in terms of power. And that means things like, OK, who are we going to run for office? That means like, who's going to run this particular kind of committee? And that means like, where are we going to put our dollars when we're deciding to contribute to someone? Right. All that kind of stuff needs to be part of what we do now in that organizing effort, not just have a disembodied conversation to give those people already in power time to circle their wagons and keep their power.
Right. Tangible, practical activism. Tangible, practical. Do something. Right. Pressing send isn't enough. Right. You have to do something. And even if you're not running for office yourself, you can, like you said, you can support women candidates. You can support those candidates that you do agree with. You can put yourself out there a little bit more. You can challenge the structural problems and those attitudes that we see in our own lives, with our colleagues, with our friends, with our family. Little interventions can make a big difference. But everybody who's seeing this and listening to this, we can all do this on small scale, and that is going to create the big wave.
And I would say, don't just call your legislator about this, right? Call the House leaders and ask them why they're not doing this. You know, last year, in the beginning of the year, we put up a piece, Hold Them Accountable, or How to Defeat Senate Bill 3, the 20-week abortion ban. We pretty much listed and named every single House Democrat who voted for the 20-week abortion ban in the previous session. There were 10 Democrats, one retired, 9 who didn't vote for it this time around. And a lot of people, you know, came up to us and said, no, it's probably because of you guys putting their faces out there on posters and saying, you're not going to vote for this. You know, if you do vote for this, there's going to be hell to pay. And, you know, you should probably be calling people like Dermody and calling the House, the Speaker of the House's office, Mike Terzai, and demand them to bring up a vote on these issues. And then also make people like Catal Drone and other Democrats or Republicans take a vote on this when they themselves have sexual harassment suits with non-disclosure agreements, or they have a history of sexual harassment. You know, put them in that uncomfortable position of making them go on the record with this.
Indeed.
You know,
indeed.
Make them take that House vote, that floor vote.
And that culture of silence, right? I like that.
Excellent. All right. So I can't believe that we're actually kept this like within an hour is what we're going to try to shoot for. This is pretty amazing. We're a little over, but that's okay. That's good. But one of the things I hope, right, that we can return to do this kind of thing kind of periodically without this. I think it's a good way of, again, kind of building our own networks and building a little kind of counter power base where we can actually have these discussions with a range of audiences. But, you know, to kind of bring this to a close today, why don't we just kind of go around the horn and kind of see anything else you want to leave us with before we take off? Amanda, I want to start with you.
Sure. I am very hopeful, actually, despite how angry I am, because I feel like I keep reading about like we're at a tipping point. And I have to side with my optimistic side on this. I do think that we are reaching a tipping point. I'm seeing people talk about these issues when it comes to things like structural power issues, standing up and holding power accountable, questioning those who are in leadership positions, who are elected, who are running organizations, more people standing up and saying, wait a minute, what? And I don't know that we're going to see the sea change be this massive shift like what I said in the beginning. I want to see women be the majority voices leading this and taking the lead. And that's not going to happen this year, but I do feel very hopeful that we're going to see a wave of women stepping up and not just reporting these heinous acts, but also taking positions, taking chances, taking the risk to step up and put themselves in a position to be elected or to run a committee or to run for something or get a job that is a little bit more higher up so that you can control things. I do feel like there are going to be some tangible positive results from this, even though we may all lose our hair pulling it out in the process.
Absolutely. Sean, well, why don't you pick us up? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
Piggybacks into, you know, what I'm thinking, which is how I think what I want people to know is how hard and painful this is for women. You know, I don't really enjoy reliving all these things that I've been through every day. It is not my job to drag them out and for the education of others. And I think that somebody's got to pick up the mantle. And at this point, it needs to be everybody. It can't but just be a few vocal women or a few women who are willing to throw their hats into the ring. If it's only going to be those women, this story is going to end the same way, with women feeling silenced and with women feeling like there's nothing to protect them. And at some point, I guess if we were smart, we would just stop putting ourselves out there and rehashing our pain. But we're committed to structural change. And so individually, women continue to sacrifice their emotional health and donate their emotional labor to try to move the bar forward. And so when a woman is running or a woman speaks, maybe we could believe her and maybe we could try to support her.
Awesome. Amen. I mean, 100%. Sean.
I would say that let's not look at the Me Too movement in a frame of a political movement that's aiming to take male scalps and hold them up to the sun gods here. people are talking about, is the movement going to be facing backlash or anything? No, it's not going to be facing a backlash. These are stories of, you know, things I've seen up close and personal being in Harrisburg over the past few years come forward to light, you know. Hearing a legislator making derogatory comments to female staffers or towards journalists and stuff like that. No, this is not like a bunch of women out to get men. This is, you know, people sharing their stories about one of the most corrupted systems that we have in, you know, in our state government.
There you have it. Well, you know, I've said my big piece for here, so I'm going to end with a plug, right? Number one, I want all listeners of Raging Chicken Press, I want you to get over to Inside 254 Podcast, right? You can check them up on Podbean and, you know, sign up for them. They also, you can donate to Inside 254 Podcast. And again, if you're listening to Raging Chicken Press, you know our deal, right? Get over and expand it and support some other folks who are kind of doing the same kind of media work. And
thanks, Kevin.
Hey, you got it. So, Amanda, do you have a separate kind of fundraising thing that you can go to?
We have a GoFundMe page. If you just look at Inside 254 GoFundMe, it'll come up. There you can make one-time donation. And then we also have the patrons that we have, patron systems, the patron levels through the Podbean patron system. Those are our sort of two primary, you know, fundraising areas right now.
Excellent. Well, I'm definitely going to put those in the links of the Raging
Thank
Chicken
you.
Press. Yeah, because I mean,
this is great. This was a good idea, Sean. Thank you. Let's do this again.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Awesome. And so, everybody, listen, we all need to be all hands on deck as we kind of move forward. We have an opportunity here, and it's awful that opportunity always kind of tends to come out of these kind of crisis situations where people are already kind of just fighting to keep their head above water. But here we are. So, again, get over to Inside 254 Podcast, and they've got an episode coming up, right, Amanda? You're mm-hmm. saying you've got one coming up on toxic
episode 26 drops January 5th. It's all about toxic masculinity. We dig into it, our Trumpster fires on it, how Trump is a great example of toxic masculinity. We get into definitions, examples. I mean, we kind of cover the whole thing. So yeah, join us. And of course, make sure that you read Raging Chicken and listen to Out to Coup. I mean, I think we need to support each other, and because our agendas align. You know, we all are in this together, and we need to support each other. So yeah, join us over on Inside 254, but keep reading Raging Chicken and listening to Out the Coop.
And I think that's what we got to do. We got to bring everybody like into this so that we're actually showing people that you're not just going to go off and kind of find your favorite and kind of go into your corner, but rather we're looking for continued opportunities to kind of expand our organizing efforts so that we're actually translating what we're doing on these podcasts, we're doing these media services into direct action kind of in the world. All right. Well, thank you all for kind of taking the time out of right before the holiday season. I'm going to say freaking holiday season. we get this going for. I wish you all absolutely the best. Great breaks, great holidays. And here's to a new year in the struggle, a reinvigorated organization. And we're going to take it back in 2018.
To 2018.
Fist bumps all around.
Woo-hoo. All right. We're out of here, folks. See ya!
No more secret lists shared amongst our staff and interns here at the Capitol about which legislators to avoid taking the elevator with. No more wink-wink jokes about which officials are the worst serial harassers. Daylight is coming for everyone.